Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burda, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, July 15th. On today's episode of the Roundup, we're going to talk about digital healthcare funding through the first half of this year, how much we're spending and what we're spending it on, and what all that means for the second half of the year and beyond. Digging into the digital health numbers today are Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital, and Gaurav Dayal, CEO of Axia Women's Health. Gaurav is subbing for Dave Johnson for a few weeks while Dave is away at the North Pole. Seriously. Hi, Julie. Hi, Gaurav. How are you guys doing this morning? Julie?
It has been a busy but great week. And everyone I talk to, I don't know how you guys feel, but no one can believe that it's the middle of July. So it's exciting to be in summer, but it's flying.
Yeah. I think I saw my first back to school sale the other day. That was kind of shocking. Gaurav, how are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning, Julie. Good morning, David. I'm visiting Chicago, and I think it's probably one of the best weeks ever to be in Chicago. So having fun. I'm enjoying the nice weather and enjoyed a nice run on the lake. So great to be here.
Great. Welcome to Chicago. Thank you. Now, before we talk digital health, I wanted to get your reaction to three actions by the federal government in response to the Supreme Court striking down a woman's right to an abortion, which we talked about on last week's show. First, President Biden signed an executive order that protects, among other things, access to medication abortions. Second, HHS said healthcare providers in all states are legally obligated under EMTALA to provide emergency abortions to women whose lives are at risk. And third, the FDA will consider approval of an over-the-counter birth control pill. Julia, how significant are these actions and why?
Well, I mean, thank God they're doing something, but it's a mess. Yeah, the White House has got a lot of flack for not being prepared for when Roe is overturned. So they've done this, but to be honest, they don't have the power to compel the states with abortion bans to actually allow medication abortion. And the executive order, you know, didn't make certain things clear that are important, like how HHS would ensure access is protected. So it's a bit vague. And, you know, the order does more. It also instructs Department of Justice and White House staff to convene private pro bono lawyers and public interest groups to defend women targeted for prosecution if they travel out of state. That's great. It's good. There's not a lot of teeth to it. So, you know, Democrats would love to see stronger measures, but the administration has resisted things like allowing abortion on federal land or declaring abortion a public health emergency. So there's a lot of bad talk going on right now.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. Gaurav, are these actions difference makers or are they just spitting in the wind, as they say?
David, I think more of the latter. I'm fully in agreement with Julie's term around that it's a mess. It's somewhat surprising, given the heads up that the administration had on this decision coming down the pike, that how flat-footed they are. Look, this is a very complex issue, and now I think we're seeing a lot of intersection between what, you know, the executive branch can do versus the judicial branch, and also federal rights versus state rights. I think just recently was in Louisiana, where they, I think, have banned abortion. A judge wanted to overturn it, did overturn it, and I think it's still going back and forth. And I say that because, obviously, as a CEO of a women's health company, it's like a daily shift in the legal landscape, and we have had to retain a very prominent national law firm just to know on a given day what's happening, given the different state regulations across even the markets that we serve in. So I fully agree with Julie. It's a mess, and I don't think these recent maneuvers change anything dramatically.
Gaurav, I'd love your thoughts, though, on the new pill as an OTC. I think that's so significant. And I mean, it'd be the first over-the-counter pill in the U.S. ever. And it's interesting to me that Welgren, the company that actually applied for the OTC approval, said that the timing was just a sad coincidence. They didn't want this to be related to Roe being overturned. So I thought that was quite something.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that just seemed to come out of left field. The timing is quite a coincidence. Look, by going OTC, if they get approval, then, of course, you have a think almost like conflicting parts of the government saying different things, right? Where now you have the FDA being uphill that's in opposition to what, you know, a lot of the other parts of the government saying. So let's see what happens with this decision. I think this itself, meaning the approval, is going to be very polarizing. So as we both said in the last few minutes, this is changing every day. And here's yet one more thing that might change as soon as the next few weeks.
Yeah. Kind of like the weather here, right? But much more serious topic. Okay, let's dig into today's topic, and that's how much we're investing in digital health and what we're investing in, courtesy of two mid-year reports, one from Rock Health and the other from Startup Health. First, Rock Health said digital health companies attracted $10.3 billion through the first half of this year. That's compared with $14.7 billion through the first half of last year. Second, Startup Health said global health innovation funding was $16 billion through the first half of this year. That's compared with $22.5 billion through the first half of last year. Julie, what's behind the drop in digital health funding? What's the good news, bad news here from the two reports? And what do you see happening for the rest of 2022?
So I'm sure that these reports don't surprise any of us, given what's going on in the markets and just macroeconomic shifts in general. But, you know, a few more stats. There are definitely fewer investments. Q2 deals are down 57 from Q2 2021. The median deal size is now slipping. We slipped from 16 to 15 million for the first half of 22. But that's a big increase from 10 million per deal and 2020. So we're still up compared to where we've been for the last decade. But everyone's really expected M&A to flourish, and that hasn't quite happened yet. We've only seen 16 M&A deals per month in the first half of 2022 compared to 23 deals per month in 2021. And, you know, folks like Rock Health and others suspect that acquirers are nervous about the macroeconomic situation, which is, of course, not surprising. And there's just a ton of potential mismatch right now. We see it every day between the valuations that companies expect and what buyers are now willing to pay because there's just so much noise in the market. So the billion-dollar question really is whether the slowdown in funding is, you know, evidence of a much more serious problem or just kind of ripples in this, you know, macroeconomic slowdown, or, you know, somewhat expected after a frothy couple of years. And, you know, while this quarter was filled with a bunch of important signals, it's kind of still too soon to know. And everyone I've spoken to is definitely just bracing for, you know, potentially a tough couple of few years ahead and getting ready. I found the most interesting part of some of this story, since all the numbers are pretty expected, to be the lens of the startup companies. And Startup Health surveyed 85 of their founders who have attempted to raise some level of funding in 2022. And although they've seen some success stories in their portfolio, many reported that it's, you know, a market going from generally tougher to ice cold. So it seems like founders agree that things are tightening, and they're really talking about a shift in largely investor priorities. One CEO said, "The investment landscape has changed dramatically from the frenzy of 2021, where there was great interest in any virtual solution to be bolted on to existing in-person care. And now with the essential failure of many of the one-off investments, investors are looking for more comprehensive solutions." So, you know, you're seeing that shift. And another CEO said, "I've been actively approached by a number of investors who are looking for profitable businesses rather than growth. So revenue is starting to rain." So things are definitely shifting.
That's interesting. Yeah, definitely chillier. Thanks, Julie. Gaurav, any questions for Julie?
Yeah, Julie, I just wanted to talk to you about your comment around bolting on virtual solutions. And I would say the frenzy that's existed over the past maybe 3 years in digital only or virtual only solutions. You know, yesterday at the conference I'm at, I was talking to an investor who was very adamant in saying that they don't invest in any brick and mortar care delivery models anymore. It's all digital. So I asked her, which app are you investing in that's going to deliver babies and do colonoscopies over the next 5 years? Because those are things that are still needed. I guess that's my question. Like, have we got a bit like overboard on this stuff and at the same time ignoring things that actually do need investment, like good primary care, good women's health, low-cost ambulatory surgical centers where people don't have to pay $6,000 to get a colonoscopy. There has to be still a lot of appetite for profitable businesses to be created in that space, but it seems like everybody only wants to talk about like an app.
Yeah, you know, it's such a good question. And I would say a year ago, we were only talking about not we, Transformation Capital, but we, the broader investor groups, were only really talking about virtual or bricks and mortar that were really hybridizing. But there's not been a ton of interest even in the bricks and mortar that were really hybridizing until recently. So I think, Gaurav, you're going to see a shift in that mentality. But depends on who you're talking to. Like, there are still the Vinod Khosla, you know, thinkers of the world who are thinking way ahead to the generation today that is digitally native and will do as much as possible digital until they have to go into some sort of institutional location or have someone come to their home. So, you know, I think a lot of investors are really looking at virtual, but as a proxy for how do you move care into places where people are, as opposed to how do you continue to support the model that currently exists.
So definitely an evolution happening in how people are thinking. Thanks, Julie. Now let's look behind the investment numbers at what's being funded. According to Rock Health, the top three funding categories so far this year are research and development, on-demand healthcare, and monitoring of disease. And the top three targeted clinical areas are mental health, oncology, and cardiovascular health. Then, according to the Startup Health Report, the biggest deals so far this year in rank order were in biometric data, personalized health, research, administrative workflow, and patient empowerment. Gaurav, what's your take on these investment priorities? Do they mirror market demand? And do you see investment priorities changing over the next 6 months?
So David, I think that when you look at it in a snapshot, a large deal can maybe skew where we view prioritization to be. So it could be that, you know, some of these deals have been larger and for that reason, they sort of bubble to the top. I frankly don't see a lot of correlation between the top few that you just mentioned and where the market needs help. And let me be specific about this. I was attending the McKinsey Healthcare Conference this week in Chicago and super insightful. Two recurrent themes, and frankly, from all leading experts across the country, a lot of pessimism about many things. I'd say two recurrent themes that came up, which I don't see reflected in these investment themes. One is a significant, significant workforce problem. Double-digit declines in nursing this year, many retirees and many people absolutely just leaving the workforce. It's not because they're switching from one nursing position to the other. And a significant decrease in the number of people applying to nursing school. There's also a concomitant increase in physicians leaving the workforce, but nowhere to the same level. So I think one area that we are all going to deal with very soon, and we're dealing with right now, is staffing shortages across the board in healthcare. One of the experts at the conference raised a very possible scenario of hospitals having to basically shut down certain parts of their care delivery wings because of staffing issues, not because of COVID, but because of staffing. I think in the very short term, and probably over the next several, maybe even the next decade now, the number one issue is going to be workforce optimization and how do we start automating a lot more work because there just are not enough people to do the work. And I don't think the demands are coming down. So now we can talk about administrative workflow, smarter data, smarter EMRs. But at some point, and probably now as we speak, we're going to start seeing a significant mismatch between the availability of labor in healthcare and the needs that we have. I would be investing a lot in that, and I don't see that on this list. Second, I would say, and I know we're all sort of simpatico on this, but we are continuing to put value-based care. I think in many ways, the conversation's taken somewhat of a backseat around COVID. The problem has not changed. In fact, it's gotten magnified. Medicare Trust Fund is running out of money. In fact, it would have run out of money by now. It's just been pushed out by another 4 or 5 years by some financial maneuvers and legislative maneuvers. That number is still here and still on the horizon. There is no solution to that problem except for pumping more money into the system, probably by more taxation. Ultimately, I think there has to be more and more solutions that are pushing lower cost care and that doesn't compromise on quality. And again, I feel like we're talking a lot more about esoteric things, especially in the digital healthcare landscape, which are not trivial in importance. However, they're not seminal in what's really impacting our total cost of care as well as our labor force shortage. So I think those are two areas that just need a lot more investment a lot sooner. And I personally don't see any significant impacts that are happening in the short term that are going to help us in the long term.
Yeah, so the smart money's on staffing and things that lower costs. That's great. Thanks, Gaurav. Julie, any questions for Gaurav?
Yeah, you know, Gaurav, your comments are so spot on. And one thing in the question you asked me earlier that I didn't talk about was just the challenge of network and actually getting physicians or other clinicians into some of these virtual care models to get them to even be a supply side. So, you know, that shortage is going to hit everybody, not just the bricks and mortar. So talk to me about behavioral health, especially since you run a company of providers. Where do you think we're going with innovative solutions in behavioral health? And do you see different channels emerging? Can you make sense of what's happening? What's your take on all that?
I think if there's any silver lining to COVID, it is the fact that it's really accelerated both care delivery solutions for behavioral health, as well as I think just a much more frank conversation about the impact that behavioral health has in our lives. I think it was sort of something that we all knew, but we didn't want to talk about. I think that's really, the door's been wide open because of COVID. So a lot of conversation on behavioral health solutions, a lot of conversations on how to incorporate behavioral health into primary care, an area that I'm very passionate about. My belief is that despite perhaps my skepticism around digital health as being the savior to everything, I do think digital health is a major, major, major force in behavioral health. It just is. It removes barriers to access. It removes just a lot of headaches of scheduling. It removes a lot of provider concerns because providers can be very effective virtually. And also, unlike my prior sort of comment around doing a colonoscopy or delivering a baby virtually, you can actually provide very good behavioral health virtually. So if there was a care delivery area that was perfectly matched to virtualization or digitization, I think it is behavioral health. So it's all positives. My concerns are on two angles around this. One goes back to my last point. There's a major shortage of behavioral health professionals in this country. So we can continue to build great platforms and apps, but ultimately, to your point, Julie, the supply chain is constrained for professionals who are able to manage this many patients. How do we solve that? And second, there's a very slippery slope around behavioral health becoming just a pathway to overprescribing for drugs. And we've had several high-profile blowups in the behavioral health space because either regulatory issues or compliance issues around overprescribing is a very quick solution. It would be very unfortunate if many of these companies end up just being a quick way to get an Adderall prescription, which is, I think, what's happened recently with a lot of companies. So I remain super optimistic, super bullish. I think the magic will be, in my mind, how does one create a digital milieu of behavioral health, which is delivered at home or in your office or wherever you want to have that encounter, but then also doesn't become a one-off in the sense that it is incorporated into your broader primary care environment, into your broader healthcare environment, so that you're not now managing seven different apps for seven different things, which I think is one of the complications we end up having with this many digital health solutions. But I am super bullish about it, super optimistic, and I really do believe that this is an area that is still very much in its infancy.
Yeah, that's great, Gaurav. And I believe that's the first time somebody's used the word milieu on the podcast. That's great.
We're upping our vocabulary game.
That's right. You know, for me, I'm just waiting on a blood pressure app for my Apple Watch, right? Then I could see how my BP changes by the topic we're discussing. That'd be a neat bar chart or line chart. Thanks, Gaurav, and thank you, Julie. And now let's briefly talk about other news this week. Gaurav, what other healthcare news caught your attention this week and why?
It wasn't news, but it was something that was brought up at this healthcare conference that I'm at that was very shocking to me, apart from the labor issue. There's a lot of conversation now about COVID-19 being a permanent thing. Like, we had several public health experts saying, you may want to stop thinking about a post-COVID world. You may want to start thinking about COVID being a permanent part of our lives, which waxes and wanes. I guess I've heard that before, but I was somewhat taken aback by that because I think the optimist in me has been thinking, oh, things are getting better. Yeah, there's been some ups and downs with infectivity, but we look like we're trending downwards here. It seems to be quite possible, at least if you believe these experts, that this is here for a long time, if not forever. Very disturbing, and it makes me think about a lot of things very differently.
Yeah, very sobering thought, Gaurav. Julie, how about you? What other healthcare news should we be talking about?
Well, speaking of Gaurav, comment between the COVID new BA5 wave that just seems to be all over the news, and I mean, you can't get away from any abortion-related news right now. It is everywhere. It's actually really hard for other stories to make it through the noise. I saw that Molina acquired My Choice Wisconsin. There's a growth story going on there. You can't find that anywhere, really. New York Presbyterian's just gotten into a huge multi-million dollar AI partnership. No one's talking about that. So we've got a pretty dominant set of headlines going on.
Yeah, that's interesting because I'm not sure I heard about either of those. So I'll have to check those out. Thanks, Julie, and thank you, Gaurav. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. And if you follow our show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite streaming service, you'll get notified each time a new episode is available. Don't forget to tell a friend about Foresight Friday Roundup. Subscribe now and don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Burda for Foresight Health.